Morning.
What happened to you?
Jogging. I didn't look. I was jealous of you.
You're sort of jogging in the back of everything.
Better for your heart if you make it pump harder.
That's true.
It's always a balancing. It's always a balancing. Anyway. The truth is that I want to talk today about one sentence that you've probably heard in the religious world many a time, and it makes me personally very sick. And the sentence goes like this. I'm machmir like this. Or, not everybody holds from that, but I do.
Yeah.
Have you heard that sentence?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sentence basically means like this. There's a chumrah out there that I personally have adopted. Now, you decide to adopt the chumrah, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But why are you telling everyone about it? That's where my problem begins. I personally think that when you take your personal chumrah and you tell the world about it and you make it very known, be it personally at your Shabbos table and shul or whatever, be it by creating a new kashrut system for the elite, quote-unquote, be it many other ways, I personally think then there's a big problem with your chumrah. Because it leads me to believe, but I suspect, that you're not doing it in order to get closer to God. You're doing it in order to tell us. After all, why do you go out of your way to tell people about it? Well, let me give you an example. There's an old joke about the mezuzah on the car. You heard the joke with the mezuzah on the car? A guy puts a mezuzah on the door of his car. So obviously people look at it. When people look at it, his answer is not everybody holds by it. That's my problem today in part of the religious world. In Yiddish, they used to say that machmir is famir, is for me. Meaning, I took upon myself a chumrah or a kula. It could be either way. It's between me and God. It's not everyone's business. None of anyone's business. And what's happening today is that not only do you want it to be everyone's business, we made a whole mass industry out of everybody's business. And let me give you one example that personally bothers me. And I know I'm going to get smacked in the face from this, from the kashrus organization. The word mehadrin, that word, appears once to my recollection in our halachic literature. Where does it appear? By Hanukkah. It is rare that it's very hard to learn from that phrase to anywhere else in Halacha. And to take from Hanukkah an example, from the Chanukiah of lighting one candle every night and adding on to it, to other areas in Halacha, you can look throughout Poskim, you'll see they say you can't give an example from Hanukkah. For whatever reasons Hanukkah exists, and I'll be happy to explain when we get close to Hanukkah, but it doesn't exist anywhere else in the world, in the world of Halacha. There's a concept, of course, of Hidur Mitzvah, which means you take a mitzvah and you make it beautiful. You take an esrog and you buy a beautiful esrog. You take a sukkah, you make it nice. That exists. But mahadrin, in the sense of adding on to the mitzvah more than the requisite amount that's needed, that does not exist except for by Hanukkah to my recollection. What happens today? Most of the Jewish world knows the word mahadrin from where?
From kashrus.
Now in kashrus, no big secret, there's different shitas and various different things, whatever it might be. Can you use a dishwasher for milchus, use the same sink for milchus and fleishiks? Can you use the same oven for milchus and fleishiks? It's different shitas. But these shitas have come to a situation in which there's a mahadrin, and then there's the other thing for the other people that are light. I don't understand. If someone paskins like the shach against the taz on a certain issue in kashrus, he's less of a Jew, he's less frum, he's less closer to God. I don't know, as far as I know, the Shach was a great Jew. As a matter of fact, one of the greatest Jews that lived. He lived through very, very hard times during the time that he lived. He lived through the Khmelnytsky massacres. It wasn't easy for the Shach to live where he lived and when he lived. And he writes a Shita. And for whatever reason, Mahadrin decided not to paskin that way. So say, we have a kashrus organization based on the Pesukei Halacha of the Taz. All right. Well, why do you call it Mahadrin? And who decides what it is? Do you remember the Shemitah year? Not so long ago. During the Shemitah year, someone decided that Mahajan means what? Remember? If you buy from Goyim. If you buy from Goyim, this is Mahajan. Heter Mechira is already a heter. It sounds like a heter. It probably is a heter. Maybe a needed heter. But ultimately a heter. And Otsar Beis Din is not Mahajan. I don't know. Otsar Beis Din means that the apple you eat has Kedushat Shvit. And according to the Ramban, not only is it a mitzvah to eat the fruits of Shemitah, but you may even have to make a bracha on it, because the Torah says explicitly the words that you shall eat the fruits of Shemitah. But someone decided, Mahajan means you buy from the Goyim. Now, I don't know. Does that sound right to you? We have to keep Shemitah, so what do? We go ahead and we buy from the Goyim. And I saw this yesterday, just yesterday, on a wine bottle. You ever notice the wine bottle? So you're sitting at your Shabbos table, it's getting boring, you can't look at your BlackBerry, you have nothing better to do, the wine bottle. And we start reading what it says there. So usually there's a word in French we don't understand, Cabernet Sauvignon, and something like that, and then you look at the kashrus, right? And there's 20 stamps on it, which is an interesting thing in and of itself. Then it says like this, Lelo Chashash, continue the sentence. Tevel, Tevel means Trumas and Maestros were taken from the grapes that they made the wine from. Well, that could be today, at least it's an Issa Derabbanan, but a high one. All right. What else is to say? Orla. Orla is you can't eat from the tree for the first 3 years. What's next? Shvi'it. Lelo chashash shvi'it. Let me translate that into English. There's no suspicion that this is from the Shemitah grapes. Why is the Shemitah grapes a suspicion? You just put Shemitah into the category of Tevel and Orla. Tevel and Orla are Isurim. You can't eat from them. Shviyat is not an Shviyat, it's a challenge. A beautiful challenge. But we decided we have to stay away from Shviyat. And if you stay away from Shviyat, you're Mahajan. So my two problems are this. Number one,
those bottles go to Chutzlar, but they don't want to take it out of there.
That could very well be. It says it's not from Shemitah. So right, it's not from Shemitah. That's fine. But why will it all shush? I think that something happened in our world. Number one, our chumras are being told to everyone. And number two, what people decide is a chumra is not exactly what I would call a chumra. Maybe it's a huge kula not to eat Shemitah grapes. It's a huge kula. God gives you a challenge and you say no thanks. There's a great rabbi, I'm not going to say his name, not to embarrass him, but he told me something interesting. He gives kashrus down in the Negev somewhere. He's in charge of the whole area. It's the Rav of Ezeri. So he has a stamp that says, Kasher, Bashkachat, Moasa, whatever it is. Someone told him in the kashrus industry, no one's going to eat from your hechsher. He says, why? I follow this and I follow that and these are my guidelines. He said, your guidelines are perfect. Too small in letters. He says, what do you mean? Don't you know, you have to write on a hechsher, with this chumrah and that chumrah, you know, today a kashrus stamp has to be 5 pages long, just like on the wine bottle. And therefore, because of that, he ultimately has a kashrus that people don't sell mecham. He says, I'm going to write kasher, and if people want to call me, they will. And if they don't trust me, then that's the end of the story. But I'm not writing a whole megillah on my kashrus. But that's what's happening today. Chumras are always been around. You can take personal chumras upon yourself. You can take personal kulas in certain cases that warrant it. But where did we come to this new realization that we have to tell everyone about it? Not only do I find it problematic that we tell everyone about our personal chumras, and I start to believe that maybe there's an ulterior motive here to make people think you're from, but I have a bigger problem with it. I believe it is the epitome of gaiva, as we know it. Total and utter gaiva. You want to look great? You want to look amazing? You take a chumrah. Now, you have a chumrah in your own kitchen. Why do you tell everyone about it? What do you gain from that except for feeling good about yourself? You want to feel good about yourself? There's other ways to gain that self-confidence, self-belief in who you are. Read Rabbi Avraham Yehoshua Twersky's books. He said, and I quote him, that he wrote, how many books did he write already? 25 books? He says he pulled off a great kunz. He wrote all his books about one sentence, believing in yourself. He just wrote it 25 different ways. It's the same thing, 25 different ways. The way to do it is not to tell everyone about your chumras. The way to do it is not to tell everyone I do this and I don't do that. Our conversations could be about many different things, but it could not be about our chumras and about our kubas. That's between us and God. You want to give a halachic shiur with different shitas and say you could be machmir like this, you could be make it like that, that's fine. But to go ahead and to tell everyone about your chumras, I find this very problematic. And though I can be very easy Haredi world, it happens in our world as well. I mean, you all know it. It happens in our world as well. We have certain chumras, we tell everyone about it, we make sure it's known. This is not the way to do it, I'm sorry. This is not the way to do it, and this is not the way to serve God. Let's face it. God is out there, but we don't see him. What is that called in Jewish? What is that called? No, give me the term. What is it called when you cover something up? Tzniut. God is tzanua, modest. He doesn't go ahead and show himself everywhere. Tzanua. There's a concept that we know of in which God basically not hides himself, God forbid, that's Hester upon him, but it's tzanua. He's there, and yet doesn't show himself. We believe in God, and part of the problem of belief in God that we don't see. So if we have to follow in God's footsteps, the halach in the Torah, and therefore, mahu rachu mafatachanun, says the Gemara, just like God is merciful, you should be merciful. God visits the sick, you should visit the sick. God creates, you should create, etc., etc. If God is tzanua, and therefore atznei alechet im elokecha, as the pasuk says in Devarim, then we should be tzanua. You have chumras, you have kulas, keep it to yourself. Don't make the whole world know about it. As long as everyone's within the fold of Shmira Shabbos and Kashrus and all the rest of the fundamentals of Judaism, I don't find it very gratifying. As a matter of fact, I find it extremely disturbing that we go ahead and we tell everyone about our chumras and about our kulas and about this and about that and how we've done it. And I'll give you an example on the other side of the spectrum. Let's go to a kula now. I just was reminded of this last night. On Erev Tisha B'Av this year, after reading Eichon Kinos, I overheard people outside talking about where they're going to daven the next day. And what was their conversation revolving upon? Where is the place that says the most least Kinos in Ephrat? Where is the shul? And there was a whole debate. He said, they have a list of 15. They have a list of 10. Forget it! One guy screams out, and everybody hears, come to my shul, we say 8 kinos, we say them fast, we're out in 15 minutes. You can't say the kinos of Tisha B'Av. You have a problem with them. It's hard Hebrew. Very incomprehensible. It's true. Why do you tell everyone about it? I think that's absolutely ludicrous. Imagine if you couldn't read. Would you tell everyone about it? You leave it to yourself and you try to deal with your challenge. There's a shul in a frat that says 8 kino, and you tell everyone about it as if you're doing them a favor. If a guy says, I have to get to work, I need a place where they say kinos and I have to get out, tell him about it, fine. But he made an issue out of the fact that they're going to go through a Tisha B'Av and they're not going to be influenced by anything because 8 kinos. So therefore, I believe that we have to start going back to the fundamentals. We just started Parshas Bereishis. So let's go back to the beginning of time. God goes ahead and says he creates the world. He tells us about it according to Rav Soloveitchik because he wants to teach us a mitzvah. What's the first mitzvah in the Torah? The halakhta bidrachav. Just like God creates the world, we have to continue the creation of the world. God rests on the seventh day, we rest on the seventh day, etc., etc. So therefore, part of the halakhta bidrachav is atznei alechet im elokecha. Just like God is tzanuah, God doesn't show himself in every which way, shape, and form. So too, we should not go ahead and show everything we do and how we do it to everyone walking out there. Now, if we can positively influence someone, then of course tell them about it. But there's a way to tell people about it. Not in the way that is done today, in which we go out and boast about our chumras or kubas. Let me give you one more example that happens on Sukkot, for you to understand what I mean. Happening today that bothers me when they sell Lulav and Esrog. There's categories. You notice the categories? Once upon a time, you picked out your Lulav and your Esrog, and somehow, hopefully you learned the halachos and you got it. There's charts out there in order for you to know the halachos quickly. Go out and buy. So they have kasher, they have better than kasher, they have mehudar, and they have olive, and they have olive olive, and they have olive olive olive. I don't know who decides on the categories, but okay, this is what they have. You decided to buy whatever category you felt comfortable with. Why did you leave the sticker on? You came to shul on Sukkot, and everybody saw on your lulav box, or your esrog box, the mehudar sticker. If anything, you want to be tzanua, a little tzanius, take it off. Take it off. You bought it, you spend whatever money, take it off. I personally heard with my two ears somebody vote on the first day you took it, how much you bought his esrog for. And by the way, this was a case of a major kula. He said, I bought an esrog for 30 shekel. What, are you proud of yourself? He's so proud of himself, he told everyone about it. In other words, you're all patsies, you all bought it for who knows what, I bought for 30 shekels, right? I don't understand this. I really don't understand this. We have to start watching what we say in general, but particularly in this realm of telling everyone about our chumas and kulas. So as we get into the next few months, we started Bereishis, we're going through Noach and Lech Lecha, we're going to go through the beginning of time, let's go back to the fundamentals. Don't tell everyone about everything you do, especially in the realm of halacha. That you want to positively influence someone like Avraham Avinu did, there's a way to do it. Absolutely there's a way to outreach. But part of outreach is not saying, see, I do this and you don't do this. That's not the way to do it. And I'm hoping, and I trust, that Be'ezrat Hashem, as we get back to fundamentals, things will hopefully go back to the fundamentals of Ma'at.